Chapter 5. The throne was Medusan iron, as hard as 10 years of solitude in the bleak shadowlands, black as winter shale. Like all things wrought by the Primarch's hand, it was beautiful. A high back of hand-woven metal plaits, fretted arms, thick bars of dark iron wound over and over like serpents, etched with silver scales. The feet were those of a dreadnought. No ordinary space marine, and to Ferris Manus all space marines were ordinary, could sit in it without appearing absurd. A child in the seat of the Gorgon. There was but one being in the cosmos it could accommodate, and he brooded from its high seat like a god over a flawed creation. He lifted his gaze, and the Thousand Suns librarian Ammar recoiled as though struck. The librarian was a ghost in a blood-red cloak. His face was blistered, in parts black, one eye milky, as if pupil and iris had been burned off under a Promethean torch. His mind, however, was a constant, probing menace against Ferris's brow.
"You were sent here to negotiate the surrender of the Garden Isle, correct?"
"Their submission, Lord Primarch."
Ferris ignored the correction.
"I am told your talks lasted less than a day."
"The Garden Isle had no interest in peace."
"The initial report of Chapter Master Cicerus says otherwise."
He turned to the Ultramarine. Unlike many of his brothers, Ferris had never sought to unite his people or bring a fractious world to heal. Harsh worlds bred harsh men, and harsh masters harder warriors, hungry for every scrap of praise grudgingly bestowed, wary always of provoking his wrath with failure. To his chagrin, Ulan Cicerus did not rise to the provocation.
"In fairness, Lord, I never sat at a table with them. Ammar did. He reported that their intent was to use negotiations as a ploy to leverage concessions through arcane means. We should take him at his word."
"Then I shall."
He was not the reckless bellicose that Dorne held him to be. Remembering how his dour brother had once had the gall to rebuke him in the company of both their warriors, and on Ferris's own bridge no less, for some perceived lapse of restraint, filled him with fury, as if his brother were here in his chamber with him. He felt his hands expand, the metal heating in response to his trembling anger. With the mastery of a demigod that knew well his own mind, he turned his thoughts away from one brother and towards another. Immediately he felt his humours balance. They were so different, yet so alike, the elegant Phoenician and the hideous Gorgon. Ferris bore his brother no animosity for coining that particular sobriquet. It fit like a glove of liquid steel. Where Fulgrim was contemplative and beatific, he was belligerent and headstrong. Perturabo, whom many that had not been forced to endure his company would have considered a more natural brother, had once asked what he and Fulgrim had to talk about. That was the first and last time that the Iron Warrior had made Ferris Manus laugh, but he had not given an answer. Ferris knew, too, that he had a reputation for being enigmatic, but there was no aspect of his character that had not been moulded perfectly to his nature. He was difficult to like, and he liked his brothers little enough, with one exception. To his mind, they were more akin than any Primarch was to another, or to the Emperor to his sons. Their differences, so pronounced, were superficial, and it had taken neither being long to recognise what it was they shared. Perfection. Both carried a need for it, strove for it, demanded no less from those bound by blood and love to call them father. Only in their methods did they differ. Where Fulgrim would scale any obstacle to reach the heights beyond, Ferris would shatter it through raw determination and walk over the rubble of its defiance. The ultimate goal and the conviction to claim it first were the same. He drew a breath, ice water over boiling iron, and commanded it to cool his mind. Perfection. He would demonstrate to all and beyond any doubt, Ferris Manus was the first amongst his brothers. He glared icily at the ultramarine.
On retrieving the librarian and learning of his failure, your immediate response was to deploy the Imperial Army to encircle the capital city of Gardinal Prime.
It was, said Cicerus. He stood with a straight back, his cobalt-blue armour polished to a high shine and bedecked with the garlands of Ultramar. He stared, unblinking, at the Primarch's throne, but not, Ferus noted, at the Primarch himself.
Yours is a lesser expedition, Ferus said. But you should have had the manpower for the conquest of a single world, except that your landing craft came under fire from atmospheric fighters that you had somehow failed to detect or anticipate. Your auxiliaries were left stranded and in numbers that were inadequate to repel the armoured counterassault that followed.
Cicerus said nothing. His gaze appeared to have turned inwards. Ferus gripped the arms of his throne to anchor himself to it. He took another deep breath.
In response to the Gardenal's offensive, you led a combined force of ultramarines, thousand suns, and a demi-legio of the Legio Ataris to drive them back to their walls.
Cicerus still did not respond. Ferus needed no further impetus to continue.
To which the Gardenal answered with saturation atomic strikes, which, again, you failed to detect or anticipate.
The ultramarine's resolve crumbled under the verbal battery. It took him several seconds to rally the strength to reply.
Half of the outer halves were levelled in the attack.
So quiet, even Ferris struggled to hear.
The satellite conurbs will be lethally irradiated for decades to come. There was no way to anticipate a response of that order. No way!
Ferris surrendered finally to the impulse to rise, heavy rings of mail tumbling from his broad shoulders as he pushed himself from his throne.
Half a demi-legio of god machines lost, 500,000 army dead and rotting.
He took one step down from the dais, clenched a fist in a jingle of mail.
Need I speak to you of your own casualties?
The look on Cicerus's face told him that no reminder was necessary. But subtlety was the brother of negligence.
856 dead or incapacitated beyond useful service. 301 with gene seed lost or too thoroughly irradiated for reimplantation. This is a calamity, Chapter Master, and you dare stand before a Primarch to dishonour your dead with excuses?
They raised the storm, said Duquesne quietly.
Constructed of black stone and glass, the Primarch's personal chambers were cold, hostile and austere, but Ferus had always found the darkness calming. The glass cabinets displayed weapons and war trophies and gave off a feeble inner light, like columns of luminescent algae in a sunken cave, striking walls of hand-cut obsidian with bands of mineral shimmer. The Lord Commander stood in one such watery pool of light, as did Cicerus, Ammar, the army commander of the 413th, and the senior commanders of the Averni, Morrigal, Vergan, and Sorgol clans, who, in expediting their departure from Vesta, had earned their places in his council. The reverberations of the warship's vast foundries all ran through this chamber, the warning tremors of a subsurface volcano that logic and technology struggled to hold in a dormant phase. Ferris pressed fingers into the two stabbing pains in his temples and forced himself to sit back down. His eyes shone in the darkness like bolts of silver.
First among brothers. They would see it.
They raised it, Duquesne said again. They used their counterattack to draw in your strength and then annihilated it.
He dropped a fist into his waiting palm.
The only right response to such commitment is admiration, said Ferris,
without taking his eyes off Cicerus.
I trust that your forces stand ready for an immediate return to Gardenal.
Lord?
I'm offering you and your warriors the chance to redeem yourselves, Chapter Master. The haste of our departure from Vesta necessitated that the bulk of my legion and all of its mortal auxiliaries be left behind. The 10th shall spearhead the assault. But we lack the numbers required.
The ultramarine blinked up at Ferris's throne, but appeared to have lost the power of speech. Ammar interjected on his behalf.
My lord, the speed of your response is remarkable, but there is no need for such haste. In spite of the setback on Gardenal Prime, our ships maintain supremacy over the void. The Gardenal are trapped on their worlds. We will starve them into submission if we must, but it will not come to that. The vagaries of the warp notwithstanding, Lord Gilliman and the full might of the 12th are at most 2 weeks away.
Ferrus nodded, then turned to glare at Duquesne.
Ready the Legion!
Duquesne and the assembled Iron Lords bowed.
But, Lord, Cicerus began.
I am here now. My brother will arrive to find a broken world.
The Ultramarines sagged.
Yes, Lord.
And what of the army?
This Ferrus addressed to the mortal officer standing at Cicerus's back. He was garbed in a tan-coloured dress uniform that had been misbuttoned, as if pulled on in haste. Over his stony grey crew cut was a peaked cap with a regimental crest in silver. His padded shoulders were sewn with badges of the 413th Expedition, of Terra, the Jovian satellite Ganymede, and of Ultramar, the rank insignia of a lieutenant colonel in the Imperial Army, and the red helix of the Medicae Corps. Ferrus frowned. The soldier stood loosely to attention, hands resting atop one another over the silver-crested head of an officer's cane, face turned down in what Ferrus had taken for awe at his present company. Duquesne emitted a bark of laughter, and only then did Ferrus realize that the man's eyes were closed, light snores rippling his lips. In a crunch of mail, Ferrus relaxed back into his throne and chuckled.
Here, then, stands the boldest warrior of the 413th. Clearly, I need not fear for the resolve of the Imperial Army.
He brooded a moment, his humour swiftly blackening, like magma exposed to the surface chill.
Leave me, all of you. Make ready for the onslaught.
Swiftly and obediently they did so, Cicerus gently rousing the colonel, who, with awesome nerve, saluted the Primarch and marched after the departing legionaries.
May I speak freely, Lord?
In keeping with his role as Ferrus's shadow, Arcaduana had held his silence until now, saying or doing nothing that could contradict the Primarch. He could have been born to be an equerry. Ferrus wondered why Fulgrim had never honoured him with such a position. He waved a hand for the legionary to go on.
There is an old Terran saying, Lord, about cutting off one's nose to spite one's face.
Ferrus gave a snort, reaching unconsciously to his face. Despite the appearance of liquidity, his fingers were perfectly solid to the touch, and though powerful enough to melt ceramite and crush Titan armour in their grip, they were cool, as though there existed a nano-layer of insulating glass between the Primarch and his own hands, although, of course, they were not his. His face, in contrast to their alien smoothness, had been battered by all that Medusa could level at an infant god who had fallen into that hell on a star. He was weathered and beaten. His lip was cleft, his nose was bent, broken multiple times.
And if a face was impervious to spite?
The Hellene of ancient Terra used to believe that ugliness of the body was a reflection of immortality of the soul.
Arcaduana put up a beringed and lightly hennaed hand to his breast, forestalling Ferrus's irate frown.
Don't think me fool enough to insult the Gorgon in his own chambers, Lord. My father named you Gorgon, and you embrace it because I happen to believe that you like it. I think, if you would indulge me, that the Gorgon does not care one iota what the Hellene believed.
"And my brother?"
asked Ferrus, lowering his hand to his lap, frowning nonetheless.
"It is in the nature of the beautiful to think naught but the best of themselves."
Arcaduana shook his head, smiling as though Ferrus had just said something funny, a lightness to his spirit that Ferrus could neither grasp nor share.
"Fulgrim is a greater being than Socrates or Xenophon, Lord."
Sitting back with a rumbling sigh, Ferris turned his face upwards. The ceiling shimmered darkly.
This I will concede.
Sisyphus suffers, Lord. His wounds are not as plain as Amar's, but they are there. And you know already the casualties the army has taken. Why are you so determined to take this world without Lord Gilliman's assistance?
For a time, Ferris ignored the question. He listened to the rumble of the Engenarium, felt the voice and spirit of it. He was connected to every nut and bolt and conduit of his great warship, through the ultimate unknowable of his Primarch physiology and the imbibed techno-mysticism of the world that fluke, fate, however one described it, had forever hence made his. Reading his silence as simple reticence, Arkaduana walked to the front of the throne and lowered himself onto one knee.
It is beneficial to express such things.
As you do, Ferris sneered. With your drawings, your writings. Santar spoke to me of these things.
The words were harsh, but Arkaduana did not let them sting him. Fulgrim, too, had a temper. The legionary closed his fingers around the grip of the sword, scabbarded on his right thigh. He drew a finger's width of steel. It winked in the chamber's light. Ferris tensed, but the blade came no further.
Warriors and sages through history have considered swordsmanship an art. In my father's librarium there is a near-complete folio of the art of war. Why limit one's pursuit of excellence along arbitrary lines? The stylus, the brush, the mind.
He resheathed his steel.
I do not even see the distinction. You are aware of the new order of remembrances that the Emperor has instituted. It is his desire not merely to conquer the galaxy, but to chronicle its conquest, and the hearts of its conquerors.
I suppose you approve of this institution, Ferris muttered.
Arkaduana dipped his forehead, feigned humility.
I might have mentioned it to the Sigilite before I departed Terra for the last time. But if you will not speak your mind to me, Lord, or to Santar, then perhaps you can find another in whom you could confide? One from whom you need fear no judgment?
Ferris sighed deeply and rested his forehead on his knuckles.
I have heard these rumours, and I have heard others. My father considers this first and most difficult part of his crusade to be nearing its conclusion. It is said that he plans soon to retire from the forefront and better attend to the construction of his imperium.
Arkaduana looked up at him, stricken.
Oh, who says such things, Lord?
They say that he means to promote one from the 15 to lead the great crusade in his name. Why, even now Fulgrim joins Horus and Jakatai and the Lion at his side for reasons that none will share.
You think the mantle should be yours?
There are many that could bear it,
Ferris conceded, leaving the obvious extrapolation unsaid, that there were many who could not. Jagatai was too raw, the Lion too aloof, even to the cold eyes of Ferris Manus.
Horus has always been favoured, Sanguinius beloved by all. Neither's candidacy would be rejected out of hand. Fulgrim would wear the Emperor's crown with grace.
Arkaduana smiled, taking the compliment personally.
And Gilliman?
Ferris snorted.
There could be worse choices. But to answer one question, yes, I believe it should be mine. I will have the swift compliance of Gardenal be my affirmation.
Arkaduana bowed. The wire bands and golden clips that held his long hair in its warrior braid, skitting off the obsidian flagstones.
If that is your goal, Lord, then for as long as Second Company is under your command, I will spare no effort in making it so. I know that Fulgrim would bend his knee to no other before you.
He looked up. His skin was darker than his Primarch father's, his eyes and hair the colouring of a terror that no longer existed, except in the genetics and memory of ancients such as Arkaduana. But Ferris could see the Phoenician's perfection in his face. "I make this oath of moment to you." Accepting the gravity of such a pledge, Ferus nodded. He sank back into his throne, his uncanny eyes turning inwards. He found his thoughts being steered towards his last memories of his brother Horus. Ferus could no longer even visualize him without seeing the radiance of the Emperor upon him, their father's favoured right hand. He was not the greatest of Ferus's brothers, but nor was he the least, and he had been the first. Ferus envied his brother those precious years, and he hated that any man, even a Primarch, could make Ferus Manus feel so mortal.
"I understand that you knew my father," he said after a time.
"For a brief time," Marcaduana answered. "As well as any man can."
"What would he do, were he here?"
"If any of us could answer that question, Lord, then we would not need an emperor." Arcaduana smiled. Ferus did not. He seldom did.